Welcome today to an interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Hussein Ahmad, Vice President, ACS, a Xerox company. Hussein shares his profound insights as the internationally renowned innovator and human resources senior executive. Hussein, you bring a history of significant and considerable contribution to executive leadership and innovation to this interview. We are indeed fortunate to have you share your many deep experiences with the audience. Thank you.
You're most welcome, Stephen. Thanks to you, too, for inviting me to this session to share my little experience, and hope it helps.
Hussein, due to your recognized international standing as the leading top-ranking executive with a deep knowledge of human resources, you were invited to a series of international global summits in China, where you were keynoted and were specially selected to lead the VIP delegation of CEOs and senior executives, including from Fortune 500 companies. It was a real pleasure to talk with you while you were in China. Congratulations on your remarkable contributions internationally.
Thank you. And actually, it was a real pleasure to talk to you too while we were in China, Stephen. As you rightly mentioned, yes, there was a VIP delegation of CEOs and senior executives. I believe most of them, including yourself, are very familiar with the International Summit and has been providing keynote speeches as well. I actually do respect all of them for their great contributions to the international community. Well, when I was approached to lead, I do not quite believe it for a while, since it was never in my mind that I'll be doing it. But then, after a short chat with the organizer, the sense of get up and stand up to pick up the responsibility is there. So everyone got to chip in. So there I was, leading the VIP delegates for the last leg of the summit. I felt honored. Well, the team was very supportive, meaning the delegates, and I actually zapping their energy while standing up on the stage.
Well, I know you did a remarkable job, and we all enjoyed just all the insights that you were able to provide. It was a great experience for the delegates as a result. Hussein, what were your top five lessons from the VIP delegation to China hosted by the government and coordinated by Great Idea Business Resources Company Limited?
Wow. Long question. I mean, long answer to five items. Well, I've enjoyed the entire trip, and I've learned a lot too. Okay, let me try. First, I think what I've learned from the visit or from the the trip, the local and federal government of China, they are all in full support of the outsourcing business in China. And it's their goal to be one of the top global hub and global player in this outsourcing business. So that's what I can think of, one of the lessons. And the second one, well, the support in this industry is not only from the authority, but I think it's also coming in from the global community. We, the delegates, are from outside of China. And I believe and I can see that most of us are willing to assist in whatever possible way we can to support the growth of this industry or business in China. And in fact, I've heard when some of the delegates are planning to relocate themselves in China. Well, thirdly, the talent. Talent are there in China. Not only just the local talent. There are also talents who is currently serving outside China that are providing great support and guidance to the local talent. And some of them has come back to China and helped to grow the business over there. Well, there's only three. Let me think of the other two. Well, while traveling with the team, what I can remember is the hairy crab. The hairy crab is very nice and sweet. I was told that it's a special kind of crab that is red only in that particular province. Well, in terms of lesson learned, like the unique hairy crab, I think there are unique resources and talent that may not be available in other places, but available here in China or there in China, that we need to explore and bring it out to the outside world. Number five, if I can think of, in terms of lessons learned, in the water city of Wuchen, you can actually take a bus ride to reach to the hotel rather than by the boat. I remember, you know, during the trip, everybody was so excited about crossing the, you know, the rivers or the water area, but actually there's a road that can take you to the other side as well. Well, that's just an advertising statement. Actually, what I meant to share is not only do cities provide well-planned infrastructures to support the outsourcing business in China, the local heritage that they have, places to visit are great. It is so natural and very relaxing. It is a good balance of modernization and nature beauty. And, so that while the business grow, the other industries also grow. And if they were to be a global hub, bringing people from outside of China, I believe people will be able to work and grow there, you know, with life balance.
You know, Hussein, do you have any sort of comments about Great Idea, Business Resources, and sort of the way they were hosts or coordinated the events?
Yeah, the Great Idea team, I think the name, you know, has some relation to their performance. They are doing a great job during the summit. I was told that this is the third time that they have conducted, the summit. They are very coordinated. It shows from the leadership to all the entire team members. And they themselves is considered running an outsourced business. So they are successful in China. And in fact, I think they do have their presence outside of China as well. Their dedication, if I have an opportunity to say thanks to them and to salute them, here it is, I want to say that. You know, while we are resting at night, I know that they stay up till like 2 in the morning to get things organized properly, orderly. That's a great idea.
I see. So you can tell why they're called a Great Idea Business Resources Company Limited.
Yeah, they choose the right name and they project, you know, the company name through the work that they have done.
Hussein, what triggered your initial interest in technology, and then what forces shaped your interest?
Initial interest in technology. Well, I believe it is those desires of wanting to know how technical things work. When I was a kid, watching all those science fiction, seeing airplane passing by, ships floating on the water, fast-moving cars, then comes the computers. Wow, that excites me more to know about technical. In terms of forces, well, during those days, the local government of Malaysia, where I'm citizens of Malaysia, the local government themselves keep encouraging all Malaysians to go for science and technology. Not only they just encourage us, there are a lot of programs and incentives and exposures with regard to technology. So I guess, with the desire, wanting to know, and then having all this around me, I guess those have shaped my interest in technology.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you went on to get a degree in electrical engineering as a result.
Yes. If I want to share a little bit about, you know, the desire, wanting to know more in technical things, I was in electrical engineering, major in communications, but I wanted to know more about electrical. So my final year project was in VLSI design, where I, you know, deep dive into semiconductors. And then in my practical training, I was assigned to a power industry where, you know, other than commissioning some capacitor banks and technical drawing, I was assigned a month, you know, commissioning a substation. And that was a great experience, and I know more about electrical other than just communication. So that's the pleasure of wanting to know how things work.
Now, Hussein, can you provide your career highlights? And you've had a remarkable, amazing career. And then your valuable leadership and career lessons for success that you want to share with the audience.
This is my shy part. Past career highlights. When I joined, I started my career as an engineer on General Motorola. They picked me up and I was sent to the U.S. for about 6 months to do some knowledge transfer of some of the technical work. And one of the success that I've done during my engineering days was that I was one of the key team members successfully completed a release of 20 test programs in a record time of 15 weeks compared to a normal 2 years period. How that happened is that we were running operations and productions, and suddenly there was an instruction from the Defense Electronic Supply Center with regard to one of the products that we test. There's some change in their timing. So we have to rework on the test program. So, as I mentioned, we did that in a record time. That has really helped the client not to delay their operation. So that's one of the my highlight during my engineering days. And I use my technical experience and knowledge to take up another challenge and launch myself into the human resource, where I bring in all the technical talent into Motorola those days, interviewing engineers and technicians and checking on their skills and running a program, what we call an engineering rotation program, to have a ready pool of engineers, and a technician placement program to have a ready pool of technicians. So those are the key highlights during the engineering days, other than having another record time to process one critical engineering product, so not to cause the customer shut down your operation. So I love to do that, and I feel satisfied when I'm able to support the client that way. Then, as I mentioned, I take a challenge into the human resource, move from engineer into HR professional. Key highlights over there, I lead the shared services team from local organizations of about 4,000 employees. Then it goes up to the national level where we support almost 9,000 employees. And then it grows into a regional center that support about 30,000 employees during that time. And eventually it becomes a global hub where we support clients, employees of about 130,000 during those days. So that is one of the key success during my HR shared service operation. And in terms of leading as well, when ACS decided to spend her wing into HR outsourcing, they bought over the HR operations and technologies of Motorola. So that's how I came into ACS, the legacy ACS. I was tasked to lead the migrations for the region, so that we successfully transferred over employees from Motorola into ACS world. And those are the key highlights. And when ACS in Malaysia started off with only 17 employees, I worked together with the rest of the leaders here, and within 7 years, we have grown up to about 800 employees nowadays.
Well, that's a remarkable journey, and I'm just thinking you can also add you led a series of global summits as the leader of an international delegation of about 50 VIP.
yes.
Now, Hussein, can you profile your current roles and then what you want to accomplish and the value you deliver to your stakeholders?
Okay. My current role is to assist the Human Resource Services Group for ACS. I should mention that ACS is a zero company, to achieve their specific revenue goal. Well, again, as you may have known, the legacy ACS was bought over by Xerox in February this year, 2010. So I'll be leveraging sales support from Xerox, coordinating with the entire Human Resource Services Group, and cultivating existing HRS and Xerox account to facilitate the sales of additional HRS or Xerox services. And I'll be doing this for the Asia-Pacific region, plus the Eastern Europe, Middle East, and Africa. Well, while working on an opportunity, through sales support from Xerox. I will also support the core human resource services sales, either with the site visit or a potential client site visit, opportunity for new logo based sales, that is sales within a current client. I'll also be involved in executing tactical plan to provide high level consulting in support of helping client to identify their target state model that will work with outsourced services, meaning that when they decide they wanted to go into the outsourced model, so I will work with them to see how the target state will be when they are in the outsourced model. And I'll also be participating in the development of new project or any services proposal. What I want to accomplish, I think that will be the end state, is for the team to achieve our specific revenue goal. So if they are able to do that, then I will feel satisfied. And as for my value to my stakeholder, well, those are my knowledge and my experience to be part of the team to achieve the goal. So I guess that would be my value to the stakeholder.
Now, what specific attributes contributed to your success?
Wow. Well, I guess one of the attributes could be I normally do not think or talk about what I'm good at. And I'm normally a very shy person when it comes to such subject. But since you ask, well, I'll share what my bosses and my friends used to say and used to refer to me. Well, process-oriented, and I'm very meticulous. However, that will sometimes have negative side effect as well, where my work can take quite a long time to complete. That's what my boss say. I still remember that. The other thing is integrity. Well, I almost lost quite a number of friends who keep digging information for me. Remember when I was running the chat services and running the HR chat services with all those information in there, I have quite a number of friends who comes in, asking for this info and that info. But I'll be as hard as rock to keep information intact. Yeah. But I think eventually I gain respect from those guys since they know that I can be trusted to manage their own personal information. So that's the plus point of it. The other thing is one of my other supervisor used to comment that I'm a great listener. Yes, I do try hard to listen a lot when someone is talking to me. This is also to respect the other party as they talk. We should listen. Well, if due to whatever reason that I may not be able to listen well, then I would normally say so to the other party that I'm not so focused that I'm sorry that I'm not able to focus. Well, not perfect yet though. I still missing some points and mess up in some conversations. especially to my kids. I'll try to improve my listening skills still. Well, other than what I mentioned above, the other thing is that I do practice constant respect to people as much as I can. Out of that, I have a lot of friends and a lot of help with that kind of attribute. And recently, some of my colleague told me that I'm open-minded and I keen to know and learn more. So it's that's how it's easy for them to work with me as well. The last but not least is be positive. I always try my best to look at things on the positive side. Well, after some time, I also realized, coincidentally, my blood type is also B positive. So I get it run in the blood. That's about it, Steven.
I see. So I hear that you're meticulous and can be process-oriented. You have a high degree of integrity, and you're very trusted. You're a great listener to everybody. You constantly sort of focus on respecting others. You're open-minded and positive. Those are great attributes. You said you're internationally acknowledged for your human resources work. What are your views on people and the people equation?
Wow. Well, that's an interesting subject, and I do love people. So to me, people is a unique being. They are very special. Well, actually, when I left engineering and take a challenge starting my career in the human resources department, it is partly because of the challenge in managing people. Well, if I'm allowed to share a thought on what could be one of the factors to be successful in the human resource, it may be that you need to be passionate about people. I met and I talked to people from all walks of life, from those homeless or beggars by the roadside, to the royalties in the palace, from a pious person in the house of God, to those criminals behind bars. I talked to babies who just learned to talk, and to an elderly person with a lot of life experiences. Well, people, I strongly believe that no one was born to be bad and to live with problems. It's the circumstances, the surrounding, the environment that shape the person. Well, theoretically, everyone has the right to be anywhere other than the basic needs of food, water, shelter, clothing that we learned as a basic needs of people, basic needs of human beings. People need to be respected, to be recognized, and to be loved. That's, you know, what I can think and my view with regard to people. And Stephen, I have not gone through the HR Maths 101 yet, so I'm not quite sure how to come up with the people equation. But I think from business standpoint, people, once they are equipped with proper skill, it becomes a talent. So people plus proper skill become talent. And talent is equal to intellectual property and somehow has some correlation to an organization's share price. Well, I dare not go further into that since this may cause some debate. But one other thing for sure, the people in an organization have direct impact to shape the organization. That's what I you know, my thought about people.
Well, I like that equation about people plus skills equal talent, which is equal to intellectual property, which results in increased share price. Hey, that's good. And the fact that you're passionate about people and it speaks to what contributed to your success, because you talk about respect and being open-minded and positive and being a good listener. And this whole aspect that, the passion and the love and respect of people, I think that kind of resonates with you, Hussein. And I know that you stood out during the China VIP tour for the courtesy and, again, the respect that you demonstrated to all. It was just so remarkable. So what does respect mean to you, and how does this equate to business?
Well, another question. Well, respect, I believe I somehow have touched on this subject here and there while answering the question. Well, when talking about respect, I think I have like 1,001 things to talk about respect. But I would like to pick up one that I mentioned in one of the questions just now, which is going back to the basic human need. So the basic human need is respect. Everyone needs to be respected, regardless their position, their age, their status, whatever that you can think of a person. So everybody needs respect. So once we understand that, then it will open up the path to others. Once we respect each other in a conversation, then the conversation starts to flow, then building trust, then it flows into gaining trust. So once you have gained trust, then the rest is subject to what the objective of that conversation are. You know? Well, that's more on the personality of a person in terms of respect and so forth. But in terms of business, for business or for an organization, they will have characteristic too. And to me, an organization who conduct bad practices will normally not be respected. Hence, for most normal businesses, it will be difficult to be associated with a non-respected organization. Hence, it's no business. So respect, as how individuals should look at it, and from business perspective, respect, business has a characteristic too. If you are running a business without good practices and you are not respectable in the market, so it equates to, bad business as well.
So I guess what I'm hearing is that respect is key to human beings and it's key to business because it's all about trust. And that's a sort of a fundamental core value, whether it's in business or with people. Now, Hussein, can you comment on the themes of integrity, value, and life, and how this enables success?
Oh, this is another interesting subject. I can spend a long time on this subject, but again, we touch here and there. We get integrity, values, and life, and how this enables success. Let me share you a little bit about the Malaysia diversity. In Malaysia, for example, we have two major races, Malays, the Chinese, Indians. So with those diversities, we respect each other's beliefs, we respect each other's cultures, hence we live harmonically. So that's how important it is. And that's also how important for Malaysia to be successful is for us to be, you know, respectful of each other. In a country, in life, so that is why I'm so passionate about this, you know, this respect thing. And the value of respect you bring to a person, to an organization, or to a country, that's, you know, in short, is how it enables success. I may not, you know, answer you fully on that one, but I believe you can, you know, sense the importance of those matters.
So what I'm hearing is that there's a lot of diversity in different parts of the world, and especially Malaysia and so on, and key to all of this is respect, and respect then ties into integrity, value, and life, and all of this enables success. I mean, you know, those are good core messages. So Hussein, what are your top best practices in human resources?
I'm going to share with you on this subject with regard to what we do locally here, because again, to respect others, there are other things that people do in other places of the world or other organizations that is considered as best practices, and it works in other organizations. But I'm going to share what are the five best practices that we do here in locally. One of the things in terms of HR best practices that we do here is what we call ADC. It is activity-based compensation. Or in other words, you know, you reward someone based on their performance, based on the activity that they do and things like that. That helps a lot, and quite a number of employees who are in this program, they really like it. The more you do, the more you get, you know, the more focus you do, the more you get, and things like that. And then the second best practice that we apply here is working from home. Thanks to the technology has helped a lot in making this practice possible. And of course, this practice is being guided by solid policy in terms of work ethic and security. This has gained popularity in other organizations as well, but I would consider that we do spearhead this best practice within our organization here. The best practice is the internal opportunity in terms of career growth. I believe quite a number of organizations, or most organizations, will do this as well. So this is one of the best practices that we do. We have several key talents who had grown in their career from a call center agent to lead position, then to supervisor, and quite recently was promoted to an operations manager level. We also have an example where from a process specialist, a person being promoted to an operations manager, and later on to operations director. Internal opportunity does not mean that it is within the same organization. We also have people who crisscross from one operations to the other, or one group to the other. And that is, I would say a good practice that we do here. And it helps to keep our talent internal. And the other one is the open door policy. We encourage employees to discuss whatever issue that they have with their supervisor or their superior, and if those matters is not to their satisfaction, it can be escalated further. So that's very healthy, and in fact, that also ties to our ethic program, where you can also send a note to the ethic committees for any dissatisfaction and things like that. Well, last but not least, the fifth one is safe and happy workplace. We as a management team here, we always review and look at all aspects of safety at workplace. For example, we go to the extent that we even come up with a procedure if an employee requires a security officer to escort them to their car in the car park area. Well, sometimes someone, due to whatever reason, feel unsecured that particular day, they can have that request, and we do have a procedure for that. As for happy workplace, other than encouraging the employee to decorate their workplace to celebrate various festive seasons that we have here in Malaysia, we also organize a get-together session over lunch or over high tea so that people meet up across different towers or organization groups. And then quite recently, we also organized what we call a Friday chill-out session. It's a small version of getting together. This again to provide platform for employees to mix around, exchange thoughts, know each other, and so forth. Well, the five best practices that we practice here in human resource here, again, are the ABC, the activity-based compensations, working from home, thirdly, the internal opportunity. We practice open door policies, and last but not least, safe and happy workplace.
Listen, what are the biggest misconceptions about human resource management, and how can they be resolved?
Oh, okay. This has been one of the key topic discussions as well, I think. Well, from my perspective and from my small group of colleagues or you know, HR community, the perception of human resource as a support services, yeah? I think when people talk about human resources, first thing in mind is that that is the last place or that is just a support team, you know, it's a call center. Well, I think that's a misperception about human resource management nowadays. What they should do or what the perception should be for human resource management is it should be in the business itself. I mean, part of the driver to drive or to enable business. How can they resolve this? Well, the HR practitioner themselves should upgrade their skill and thinking so that they can be on par with the business leader or with their business colleague. So that's what I can think of in terms of the biggest misconceptions and how they can resolve that.
I see. So really, human resource management really ties into the bottom line of the business, enabling the organizational goals, missions, the vision, overall mission, and really supporting to make sure that those organizational objectives are met in a decisive and agile way.
Yes, yes. It's very true. And in fact, Stephen, again, based on my little circle, yeah, in fact, there are some organizations who have changed their title not to be called as a human resource or HR or personnel department. They even changed their department into talent and culture, and some just call talent department. Some refer themselves as a culture department, and some even term themselves as in business human resource or in business HR rather than just an HR person. So that's, things have changed a bit, so we need to do more about it.
Well, that's excellent. And I guess even sort of having a C-level, like chief operating, chief human resource, or chief talent officer kind of feel to it. So it's on the executive committee of the organization because it's critical to the success of the organization. Hussein, what are the major challenges in human resource management and how can they be resolved?
Okay, I think the major challenges in human resource nowadays is partly because of the trend as well, the trend that the globalization and so forth. So if I were to deep dive to it a little bit, more and more of contract workers, more and more jobs, being turned into contracts. So with that, those contractors working in that organization, normally they will have less commitment. So that is a challenge for HR to strengthen the commitment and how to guide all this workforce so that they are committed to the work. There are many other challenges, but I'm just focusing that I I would say that that's one of the major challenges for the time being.
And then what are the biggest opportunities in HR and how can they be actioned?
Okay, opportunity in HR, if I were to relate that to the misconception just now and also to the challenges that they face, now there are a lot of technology in place in human resource compared to last time. Yeah, an HR person also need to know about technology because as I mentioned, there's a lot of technology in place. So it is the biggest opportunity for them to leverage in all this technology. And I may sound like marketing or advertising, but this is where they can outsource those work so that the HR committee can be more focused, and can be more business-minded and be closer to the partners, to the business partners. So that's what I can think of in terms of the biggest opportunity now and how they can action. Take up the challenge, take up the things, and with all these technologies going on, some of the work they don't have to do, especially on the transactional HR matters, so they can free up their time and focus more into becoming closer to the business.
You know, Hussein, it's interesting that you do have a strong technology background, and throughout this conversation you talked about sort of HR being sort of very much thoroughly integrated with technology, so very much matches your background with your degree with electrical engineering and becoming a very successful engineer, and then from that doing a lot of innovation in HR subsequent to that, and then now your role as a vice president in one of the most significant companies around the world, and just all of the leadership that you've demonstrated throughout your career and even in this interview. Now, looking into a crystal ball then, and because you are this acknowledged leader and visionary worldwide and human resource talent, but with a strong technological background, can you provide your global perspective on human resource trends and things like the skills gap, perhaps, or demographics, the changing global business environment, and more? Any trends that you think that business executives and people should be aware of?
Okay. I'll try that, Stephen. If you look at many angles, there's many trendings going on. But I think one thing that we all is aware of, not only just from human resources, but in other aspects as well, is the effect of globalization. The effect of globalization, the shrinking of the world. Sometimes we say that the world is flat. So, and also, with the advancements of technology and things move pretty fast, so this trend has created other things inside or towards a human resource. Yeah, workforce being distributed across the globe, so the labor pools are all over the place and they are mobile, and some of them are isolated. I do have an experience where we hired an employee, we haven't seen the person on board virtually, and never know, just heard who their supervisors are, but never get a chance to see face-to-face, those kind of things. So these are the trends of the human resource, the globalization, the world of labs. So with this, dispersed of workforce and everywhere in the world, HR has one new challenge coming in. Which is to be the glue, to be the in-between between the organizations and the employee, to ensure that the employees are engaged. So this is the best opportunity for HR to come in and to provide more value add into the business, meaning to bridge the gap between the isolations and employees and organizations. So that's one thing I can think of in terms of HR trends. In terms of the skill gap for the HR community, I would say it's also tied to the challenge just now and the perception. Other than just the core HR matters that they are mastering, HR practitioners should get themselves familiar and have the business acumen so that they can be more value add. Because I met a friend, a new friend recently, who is in the oil and gas industry. He's the HR person. To my surprise, when I was talking to him, he's able to communicate and he's able to explain about the entire business of the oil and gas and how that relates and how HR in that industry, you know, value add in terms of the business growth. So that's how the future HR is going to be. That's a skill gap. But in terms of the world resources, the skill gap, this is something that I think almost everywhere in the world, I would say, because like Malaysia, which is close to me, we have graduates who are unemployed. And at the same time, we have quite a lot of work opening, but those talented people or those resources or labor, their skill, you know, has gap that we need to work on. So there's a mismatch there. In terms of demographic, I can share in Asia Pacific, especially or in Malaysia specific, for example, more than between 40 to 50% of the workforce are within 18 to 25 years old. They are very young workforce, and nowadays people are talking about the Gen Y generations. So that is something that we need to focus on, because this demographic, these new generations, the way they think, their commitment and things like that are slightly different. That, you know, they were born together with computers, with all these communication devices and so forth. However, while we are focusing on that, somehow to a certain extent it can be overrated as well. So because I think after a while, all these Gen X or Gen Y, once they settle down, once they have their own family, they may settle down as a Gen X or like the baby boomers as well. So that's my personal perspective. But while they are still single, while they are, you know, young in the workforce, their characteristic is slightly different than the experience or the old generation, I would say. Changing global business environment, it all relates to the trend just now, the globalization. Business, as you know, people are looking for a profit and they change the business model, especially for those high-cost countries. They start to outsource work to the low-cost country, regardless in what domain they are, be it in IT, or business processes, finance and accounting, human resources, and things like that. So that's the change in global business environment. And also the mergers and acquisition, the buying of an organization. So in terms of HR, the future HR or the current HR need to be familiar with all this new business environment, where they're going to be. They got to be more global, they got to be more familiar with new legislative labor laws of a different countries and things like that. So, Stephen, I guess that's my little perspective with respect to what's going on.
You know, Hussein, what I was just sort of really struck by was this concept, and I never really thought of it this way, but, you know, in the West and also in Asia, you have this very significant youth movement, which we call Gen Y in the West, And there is a lot of press and sort of a lot of research saying that their attitudes are different, they think differently, but when I think about it, you could be right. As they have families and start raising children, and perhaps they will become more like the older sort of generation that's out there as they become more accountable to other kinds of pressures that are on them. So that's a kind of an interesting thought.
Yeah, that strike me too as I think about it. Because I was so, you know, passionate about this Gen Y, and I've been cautioning, you know, the management team, the HR, about how we should handle these new generations, and we put a lot of focus into that. But at the same time, when I think about it, especially in the Asia region where, but good that I heard that your comment is about the same in the Europe, probably in the Westerns as well. Once they start to settle down, when they start to have their own families, so those basic values, family values start to come in, and as they grow in terms of their career and age, preferences start to change and they start to look back to their parents and things like that. And probably, you know, they will be like the Gen X or the baby boomers as well. So something that we want to take a look at, or probably some studies need to be revised and see whether it makes sense or not.
So Hussein, what are your thoughts on computing as a recognized profession like medicine, law, engineering, with demonstrated professional development, adherence to a code of ethics, and globally recognized credentials?
This is a very important question, I think, Stephen. I wish not only just in the computing professions, but in all the major professions that we have. Because once you are being recognized in a specific profession, or you have all these recognized credentials, yeah, especially when you measure in terms of the knowledge, in terms of the expertise, and especially the code of conduct, sorry, code of ethics. Once you have all these credentials, those things can be measured, and you set a kind of standard. Yeah? And you know why, especially for the IT folks, with all these credentials, it will create trust. Trust, especially in today's world where the computing professional has access to a lot of confidential information. Yeah? So we need to know who's touching those information. Well, nowadays, with all this technology, computing, you know, there's no paper trail to back up. So it just amazing. You know, an IT professional, by a click of a button, could have made an entire huge, massive information gone in a split second. And they need to be trustworthy. So, and then the speed of execution. Nowadays, we heard about professional hackers. We have these people because they do the vulnerable tests, they do this kind of test, that kind of test, scanning and so forth. So, if they can't be trusted, so we have problems. Yeah? So, that is why I believe my thought towards competing to be globally recognized, having global recognized credentialization, it is very important. Because the things that the IT team or the computing teams touching on is very sensitive, especially with all the data bases and things like that. That's my thought.
Now, again, we're going to try to get you to look into your crystal ball, but sort of in a more general sense, can you provide your top predictions of future trends and their implications and opportunities?
Crystal ball again, yeah. Okay, predictions of the future. I may not be able to give all the five, but I'll try my best. I think in terms of IT, the future trend is the convergence of devices. What I mean is that, let us take a look at the phone, for example, the mobile phone that we are holding. It used to just do for calls and SMS and those kind of things. Now you have cameras. Now you have a lot of other things that eventually, I'm not surprised that one day everything lies in your handphone. Yeah? So that's the future trend. And the implications and the opportunity for that, there will be a lot of opportunities for the IT folks to be more creative and putting in more applications into it. And again, it boils down to the business. Yeah, that's IT. In terms of human resource, in the future, I'm not a predictor, but let me try. They will be the driver for people so that innovation can happen that will lead to new business. Yeah. So if they can drive talent, they can drive people accordingly so that people are innovative, then those new inventions, innovation, will lead to new businesses. In terms of the entire technology, I'm looking at semiconductor, which is closer to me. very soon, I guess in 2 years' time, we're going to go into about 15 nanometer gate size. So it's very tiny. So things getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And this semiconductor technology go hand in hand with the photographic technology. When we have a smaller semiconductor gate, we can have a smaller devices. Smaller devices will create a more sophisticated or complicated photographic technology that can make us smaller. So it's a vicious circle. So as things getting smaller and smaller, the technology is getting more complicated, more advanced. there will be a lot of sensors introduced in all the gadgets, and application will be more intelligent. So in terms of that's the implications, you know. Say, for example, you pick up a remote control, a TV remote control. In the future, it will be able to tell who is the one who's picking up by the rate of you picking it up, you know, by the button that you have been always pushing. So it memorizes who you are. So your refrigerator, for example, we will know what is the time of the date for the compressor to run. Because different time of the date may have different electrical tariff. So it will try to go for more optimum, a very optimum costing. So gadget equipment will be more intelligent. So there's implication. Opportunities is always business opportunities, opportunities for you know, for grow business, opportunities for inventors to do more creative inventions. Last but not least, I would like to touch on CSR, which is the corporate social responsibility. Well, as corporations is growing after profit, where some may say that the end justifies the means, so CSR becoming more and more important, because this will somewhat ensure that people or businesses or corporations do not go overboard, so that there's some channel that look back into community. So people stay, you know, within the right scope. How about that?
Well, those are excellent sort of predictions of future trends. And now I'm going to go into sort of a different area. And then what would be your top recommended resources that people can look to or look for, where they can get more information, or, you know, what's out there that people should be looking at?
Sorry, I need your little help here, Stephen. You mean resources when where they can get information?
Yes, that's correct. Information or websites or periodicals that you'd recommend. Anything that you would recommend as being a good resource that people should have in their lives in some way.
With the advancement of technology, Stephen, there's a lot. Nowadays, the application become a verb. Like, for example, Google up, those kind of things. Yeah, that's where I normally go. And from there on, for example, in human resources, there's always this HRO magazine. There's always, you know, the IT magazines. I'm sorry, I may not be able to point exactly, but with the advancement of the technology and the computers and the search engine, I think that's where the best resources can go to. And it will lead from one resource to the other as well.
Well, that's a good tip, and I guess that's what people are trying. It is trending that way, right, where, you know, it's a natural, when you're looking for information, you put it into the Bing search engine from Microsoft, or you can use Google or one of the others, and then you use that as kind of your start point, and it could even be your end point for looking for resources. You know, Hussein, you travel the world, you're, as I mentioned, an acknowledged leader, you're a visionary, you're very, very successful. So you must have come across one or more stories that are really interesting or surprising. Can you share one or more of these stories?
Okay. But it all relates to the work, isn't it? All right. Okay. While we do our work, you know, we manage, we are an outsourcing organization, we manage employee data and things like that. Suddenly, there was one day we received an email from one of our senior executives, and he says, "I am not terminated. Please activate me." Wow, to our surprise. So what I'm trying to share with you is that the kind of work that we do, yeah. So if you miss a little focus, for example, that can be the outcome where you accidentally terminated a wrong person, and that's just the beginning. There's a lot of things that have happened, you know, once you terminated an employee. So that's how important, you know, for our work to be focused in what we do. All right. I don't have my story, but the other stories or experience that I had is that there was a day that I had a free trip to Singapore from Malaysia to meet up with the business head just to say I am sorry. What happened was the client, this particular client in Singapore, they are the sales team, they have their sales incentive. So we were instructed to transact their sales incentive for their payout. However, in the process, there's a lot of approval going through and things like that. The team missed a date. So instead of they being paid this month, they are being paid the following month. Being in the sales team, their payout is huge. Some of them could have made some commitment for that month, but when they see their paycheck, then the dollars are not there. Nothing missing except that they are not getting it in the right month. So the head was so furious, and the very video was so furious. I tried to explain over the phone, you know, and email, but eventually how to solve that and to pacify that excitement down there, the anger. I had to, I literally flew down to Singapore, meet up with the entire team, literally say I'm sorry and explain how things happened. So the moral of the story here is, of course, once you screw up, people are not happy. But for us to satisfy our customer satisfaction, I mean, expectations, sometimes we have to go along that line, you know, to make things happen, to patch things up. The other story is about how far we went out to provide support. So there was a day that we had our CEOs and COO came over to Malaysia. Very flexible. We have planned for everything. They're supposed to be here for about half a day, but somehow things changed. They have to cut it short due to a recent flight, so only a couple of hours instead of half a day. So we made an arrangement. The CEO and COO arrived at the airport. We put them into, you know, in a special room for them to prepare and freshen up, you know. And one of the assignments is for their coats to be ironed out. So we work as a team. So there's a couple of directors around. So to show how much we went out to provide this kind of support, I have one of my senior directors holding the CEO pen, running from the main building to the satellite area to find a place where they can, you know, iron the coat and things like that. To me, during those days, we laughed at her. But when we you know, sit back again and think about that, that's how far we went out to provide our support, you know, and that's how we did it. And those are some of the stories in my work days. There are many others, but I'm not too sure which one I'm going to share.
Well, your stories definitely put a smile on my face. They're, you know, kind of fascinating. Now, if you could sum up your life experiences for career tips for the ICT professionals, that is, those are in information communication technology, what would be your tips?
Okay, for the ICT professional, from my life experiences, probably the tip that I want to tell them is that at whatever level, whatever work that you do, you may want to realize or relate to the impact of the individual or the person, you know, impacted by your work. I don't know how that translates or how that, you know, received. Or if I were to put it another way, the tip is, again, in whatever things that you do at whatever level, you should understand how your work will impact the next person who will receive it. This is a change process. It eventually will affect, you know, the business as well. What you do here, what you provide to the next level will pick it up and then we'll send it over to the other parties and so forth. So it's a chain reaction. If you can just focus on what you do and understand how you impact to the other party, I think you'll be safe and business will run smoothly.
Well, that's an interesting tip because I guess it applies to life too, right? So if you're looking at the outcomes of your work and the impact it's going to have on the different kind of layers that surround you, well, you know, that could have an impact in terms of even life experiences or your friends or your family. If you're always looking in terms of their best interests and what provides value to them, ultimately you're going to be a better citizen.
Right. And the other thing, almost similar to that, that I always told my team members as well, you know, you understand your work is one thing, but when you pass it over to the next level, to the next stage, to the next person, don't just throw it over the fence. you got to make sure that someone on the other side catches up whatever that you do on this side. Because sometimes people take for granted, I've done my part, I've done my job, you know, maybe the next person will just pick it up. But, you know, to be responsible, I think, and to make sure that it is successful, we got to do our job, but at the same time, we got to make sure that the other party receives it. And if it is not, we should at least, you know, raise an alarm if something is not happening.
You know, we're down to our last question here, and this is kind of where I turn the table, Susan, and it's sort of like, what questions did I miss? In other words, what questions would you have asked, and then what would be your answers?
yeah, so we turn the table, yeah. All right, before I answer that or provide these key questions, I just want to share with you one little story, how I got involved into the human resource, but also part of how I got involved in the people chemistry in me. I was a young engineer when I joined Motorola, and I think I'm probably the first engineer who get involved in people activities. There's a group of people, about 20 or 30 people, in a meeting room, brainstorming about how to run a family day, where they looked at all the logistics, they looked at the food that we're going to supply, they looked at all the games and how to handle children and how to handle elderly, you know, where the opening ceremony is going to be, and so forth, very detailed. Suddenly, I put up my hand, and the chairman says, yes, Hussein, what questions do you have? Then I asked them, you're going to have about 20,000 people in these big areas. Then I asked them, how many toilets you have? And everybody stopped for a while and looked at each other and said, yeah, we never thought of that. 20,000 people in a close area, we talk about all the big things, but we never thought about this very basic fundamental. Okay, having that story, if I were having the opportunity to ask questions, I'm going to ask this probably three basic questions. First, let me ask, what are matters important to you today? Yeah, and if you ask me that question, probably at this level of life or career, I may say what important to me at this point is the work-life balance. Different people at different time of their career may answer differently. And then the second question that I may ask is, how I can help you? Yeah. So we know the person, we say, this is what really important or what really matters to him or her during that time. Then I will ask, how can I help you? So the respondent may say, how, you know, that he or she thinks that I can help her or him. Then probably the third question I may ask is, how much are you willing to give? I mean, the respondent is cheating. Because I think in this life, we look at all the big matters and this kind of thing, but I think we need to look, sometimes we need to look at the individuals as well, the nucleus, the atom. We got to make sure that the individuals are taken care of. Sometimes we looked at the rest, but we never looked at ourselves, what we need and how to help, and then what we can contribute. I'm not too sure whether, you know, those really relate to this discussion, but that's something that I would like to share and probably would like to ask.
You know, those are very fine questions, and I can see how they kind of relate to your core values, you know, about respect and trust and integrity and, you know, life and value. I mean, I can see how all of your core values resonate through every action that you do. Well, you know, Hussein, it's just a remarkable journey on this discussion we've had today, and you're just an amazing individual. You're just an amazing executive and a leader who's recognized worldwide, and we will continue to follow your significant global and historical contributions, and we do very much thank you for taking the time to come in to share your insights with our audience.
Once again, thank you to you too, Stephen, for providing me this opportunity. But as I share with you all these things, I feel much, much more tiny and much, much more, you know, humble. So I don't feel comfortable. But I hope it helps.
Well, it very much will help. And it's just a great number of insights you've shared, and again, thank you. You're just a magnificent person.
Thank you.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Hussein Ahmad, Vice President, ACS, a Xerox company. Hussein is the internationally renowned innovator and human resources senior executive.